This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Jewel Osco.
It's time for 5 on. Leila Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got
5 on it. Caleb Williams spoke for himself. That's a good thing. We also heard from Russ Dorsey talking about not only the bleakness of the Rocky season and why it can be worse and most likely will be than the White Sox year last year, but also what the Cubs are doing, the significance of it, and also the White Sox having a good series against the Mets. And Trista Crick joined us at 11:25 to talk about the NBA playoffs.
Number one.
Are you okay if Caleb Williams doesn't answer any more questions regarding the Seth Wickersham book after finally speaking out about it to the media yesterday?
I don't think that's going to happen because the book is going to come out. And then you're going to read it in a book form. And there's going to be more to it. And then people are going to ask us the same questions. And then we're going to have to ask the quarterback again. So no, I mean, that's how this works. That's why the book comes out.
I hope the answer is yes, I'm fine with no more questions. But that would be assuming that no more new information comes out about Caleb Williams and the process through the book. Now, I will say this. If it's about what happened prior to the draft, I won't have more questions probably, because I feel like those questions have been answered. And what more could there be? I have more questions for Ryan Poles. That's who I have the questions for. Throughout this whole thing, what did you say to convince this man to put it? What was the sell? How do you think you did it? Were you aware that he felt this way? Obviously, the answer is already yes. I just want to hear how you answer that question, because you said no matter what, we are drafting you.
No matter what. And they, as we know from Seth Wickersham, the article's author, the book's author, they didn't even look at Jaden Daniels, even though Jaden Daniels might have wanted to be here more.
And that is another question that I'd be willing to try to get an answer for from Ryan Poles.
Yeah, the last thing we need is the GMs to have quarterback blinders on, where they have a one-track mind.
My question to all these people who have been tweeting and texting furiously about how we don't care, nobody cares.
Let me tell you on several mediums and several times how I don't care.
Then do you care how Ryan Poles is operating? That's my question. And if you don't, I feel bad for you. You should care how Ryan Poles is at, because there's a growth thing here with Ryan Poles. Yes, he's still in charge and everything, but I want to know how he got from point A to whatever we're going to call this point currently that we are certainly on right now.
Point A to point what is happening.
Yeah, basically.
Because that's where we're at with this. And you're 100% right. I also have questions for the people who are like, just have faith. Why would I have faith in that regime?
What track record? No, it's some of the same people who are saying just have faith are the same ones who say it's not a big deal, because I would have had the same concerns. Well, if you had the same concerns,
how is that not a big deal? That person is in, therefore, justifying your thought process.
Yes.
Like that means that you're correct.
So the answer to the question is, am I okay if Caleb Williams doesn't answer any more questions regarding the Seth Wickersham book? It's going to drop in September after he finally spoke to the media yesterday. I'm okay for now.
Let me tell you on Facebook 700 times about how I don't care.
Hit me on my Pinterest. Hit me on my Pinterest.
And then I'm going to text you in all caps. And then I'm going to complain about how nobody wants to work anymore. And then why nobody wants to buy a house. And if you just save money on avocado toast, wait, what?
So there's one more thing about this piece I wish was addressed, because I'm willing to put it behind us and not ask about it. We are going to be watching about certain things, see if those are coming true. But I still want to know about the nuke thing. What exactly was Caleb Williams going to drop to make him not be a Chicago Bear? Like, what was that thing? I wish that was addressed, but we don't know.
Additionally, or what was Carl going to suggest?
Well, Carl was probably going to go to the Manning slash Elway playbook of my son won't play in Chicago and see if that got him anywhere.
Also, he said he'd drop a nuke on the city, and people are like, this isn't news. He said he's going to drop a nuke on Chicago.
I think that is the nuke,
though. Don't care.
I think
would you want to be
Oppenheimer?
Here?
Like, what are we talking about?
That's it. The lack of second-step logic here is just really fascinating.
And the specific timing will be the Bears face the Vikings on September 8th on Monday Night Football, and September 9th is when this book will be published.
Let's just hope we're talking about September 8th's result and not talking about some new development in the book, but we'll see.
Yeah, I am not confident in either, to be fair. And I feel like all things can be true.
Number two.
You can be upset about not wanting to come here. All these things can be true.
Many things can be true, and we're going to find out some truths about the Cubs this season, aren't we? This is a question inspired by the Score's own Bruce Levine during a recent conversation with Mully and Haw. Who has been the Cubs' most consistent pitcher?
Okay, I think it has probably been Matt Boyd when you consider the body of work. That's yesterday's starter, and that's not a knock on Jameson Taillon, but he himself has talked about how he has changed up his pitch mix to get some different results. So even by that definition, I would say not as consistent. Awesome, interesting, effective, yes. But Matt Boyd goes 6-large yesterday, gives up only one run, wasn't earned, 4 hits, throws 8 strikeouts. How do you not appreciate what he's done over the past, well, since the season began? That was a savvy trade by the Cubs, and he deserves a lot of credit.
Okay, so this is a great question because it has you looking at things, and the first name that came to my mind was Shota Imanaga, but he's made 3 less starts than everybody else and is currently on the injured list. I think Shota Imanaga has been excellent for the Chicago Cubs this season. And so then I looked at Matthew Boyd and I said, is Matthew Boyd, is he the guy? Is he the one? But then I thought about it. I was like, you know what? I think their most consistent pitcher is the guy who's pitched 14 games and is yet to give up a single run. Yeah, Drew Pomerantz. I'm going with him.
It's true.
He's got an ERA of 0.
Hasn't it been over 4 years since he's given up an earned run?
Yes.
And, like, what happens? Do you pause? Like, is it a moment of silence in the game because he had such a good run?
And he's doing it with swing and miss stuff because he's got a strikeout per nine rate of 9.9. He's been highly, highly effective. His whip is looking real good. You want to know what his whip is? 0.553. A good whip is like 1 and below. His whip is 0.553. Over 14 games, he has not given up a run.
Man.
Question within a question. Is that the one pitcher when, bullpen pitcher, when he comes in, you have the most relief? More like, all right, we got this. Because in 12.2 innings, only allowing 4 hits, 3 walks. He's been unbelievable. I guess they're a bullpen pitcher that gives you as much confidence as Drew Pomerantz right now.
Yeah, Brad Keller. He's my glad I called that guy. So, yes, I still think Brad Keller is your high leverage guy until he proves otherwise. I can't believe what we've seen out of him. It's so funny because when you've got Flexen, Pomerantz, and Keller, they all have a lot in common. Older, later in their careers, former starters have reinvented themselves and are now working in this fashion.
I'll say this. Brad Keller's pitched in 25 games. He's given up runs in 3 of the 25 games he's pitched in. That's pretty good.
Yeah. When you consider what we're talking about now, am I now paranoid that it's been jinxed? Perhaps, but also bullpens. Like, these things are going to happen.
And the other thing I like about Brad Keller is that he's only pitched 2 innings one time, like 2 full innings one time out of those 25 appearances. And if you go with 3 times... he's given up an earned run on 3 separate occasions. But in those 25 appearances, 1, 2, 3, 4 times he's appeared without striking someone out. So in 21 of his 25 appearances, he's had a strikeout. Swing and miss stuff.
Number 3.
Has Layla Rahimi gone crazy by posing this question? Is Andrew Benintendi a likely candidate to be traded at the trade deadline?
I know. I like you, did not know that this contract was going to pan out in any real meaningful way for the Sox. And when you consider his value relative contract-wise to the team and how valuable he was when they signed him and how he is also the top prospect from the top 100 prospects of 2017. There's a lot to smirk at here. But he gets four RBIs yesterday in the White Sox win. And he has been hitting at a clip for him, which is very impressive. I know that Jed Hoyer said it's going to be a seller's market. But I think there's enough there to appreciate what he's done to say if somebody needs a diversified lineup, that there's a contender who thinks they need just a little bit more. Andrew Benintendi might be their guy. And we're not even saying this on behalf of the White Sox payroll, which, if he were to leave, it might be a significant amount less. It's really just because he's created value here for himself. And as a veteran, he probably deserves that, right? And I believe in the United States of America.
So I think the question, yes,
just sounded right.
You're crazy with the question because, of course, he can be traded. What are we talking? He gets paid $15 million a year. He's in the third year of a 5-year deal. Pay most of his salary, get prospects, and keep it moving. That should be the White Sox whole identity here in this rebuild. Here's what I'll tell you. Last year, the second half, when we did the splits post All-Star break, when he finally got things figured out, his OPS plus was 130. Right now, his OPS is 736. It's an OPS plus of 109 this season. He can help somebody. He's a professional hitter. Is he great? No. Is he a former All-Star who has experience being on good teams? Yes. Yes, he's movable. He could be moved to the deadline, mainly because it is a seller's market. So sell what you can sell. He's a guy that they can sell.
847 says, oh, yeah, she cray cray. All right, yeah, I might be. And
why
maybe I'm
you
just motivated after the White Sox win yesterday.
But I don't think you're crazy for saying that he's sellable. I think you're crazy for implying that he wasn't sellable.
I don't, because the contract, I think, was an issue based on age and production, frankly. And I feel like now, maybe, perhaps not.
He's 30.
But what team would want him? I understand, like, what contender with money
want that? Don't worry about that right now.
He's an experienced bat. Any team that suffers an injury and needs, like, a solid left fielder.
If I'm, like, the Phillies, or if I'm even the
Phillies
Tigers.
Don't need Andrew Benintendi.
That's where I'm like, what contending team is like, oh, Andrew Benintendi's going to push us over the top? Like, I don't think there is a team.
I like how you brought up the two of the top five teams in
exactly.
baseball. You're like, oh, if I'm the Dodgers. No, okay. Yeah,
well,
not the Dodgers.
I'm looking at teams that are willing to spend or, like, have that contract. Because the White Sox are probably going to have to eat some of it, correct?
No, that's my point, is in today's day and age, $15 million isn't that much. One. Like,
not,
per
well,
year.
It depends
for
on
the
who
White
you
Sox.
Ask.
It's
like,
not
the Rockies
everything.
Are not like, hey, we're after Andrew Benintendi.
They're already on the hook for it. My point is, if you want prospects, you pay more of the money down on the remaining contract to get more prospects. That's what they should be doing here.
This is a weird world. Thank you for indulging in my theoretical ideas.
Number four.
The Oklahoma City Thunder and Alex Caruso are headed to the NBA Finals where they'll be the favorites against the winner between the Pacers and the Knicks. Does this change your opinion on whether the Thunder won or lost the deal they made with the Bulls for Caruso?
No, it doesn't change my opinion because I said then and there that the Bulls lost that deal and nothing has changed. I know you love Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey's cool and all. That's great.
When you say you, tell us who you mean.
Anybody who was like, oh, Josh Giddey, like,
oh,
nah,
I mean
Robbie Triano. Yeah, who's a Josh Giddey stan, like a old school.
Stan that man, pay that man.
He watches, this is what he does. He turns down the volume on the games, the Bulls games, and he just plays Eminem stan on loop. That's how he watches Josh Giddey.
Dear Giddey.
Yes.
Yeah, if Robbie Triano had $30 million and 2 cents to his name, he would give all $30 million and keep the 2 cents to Josh Giddey.
I'm not driving my car off a bridge, though, for Josh Giddey, though. I'm definitely not doing that.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I mean, if I'm not standing that much. I mean, I do think, like, Josh Giddey is just a good basketball player. He makes everyone around him better. Yes, defensively, he's going to get blown by. Yes, there's some lapses that he has.
Yes, defensively, he's going to get blown by.
Because you could have said he's not a great defender.
It's an offensive league, guys. Josh Giddey does that. That's what I'm saying.
Really? Let me ask you this question. Why is OKC in the finals?
That was a Parkins troll, by the way.
Why is OKC in the finals right now?
Well, they have unbelievable talent, and they do have a player off the
bench. Hold on.
We're not giving credit that the reason the Thunder are in the finals is because of Alex Caruso.
But when they
judge talent, do you listen to who they value?
Yes, but I think both teams won the deal. If the Bulls kept Alex Caruso, he's a wasted talent. They got someone who is young and good.
It wasn't about the deal. It was about the fact that the Bulls could have first-round picks for Alex Caruso.
Draft capital was greater.
That was the importance. And you know who knows a thing or two about having draft capital and first-round picks? Ye Oklahoma City Thunder.
So they had so much draft capital, you could have just gotten a first-round pick.
Or you could just have a sure talent. Like, what are they going to do with that pick? If they make those picks, do you trust AK with them? And with those picks, what type of player are you getting with him? Or what contract are you offloading?
So you don't trust AK, right? But he made the deal that we're talking about.
Here's the other part of
this. That's a good deal. He made a good deal.
Isn't the average age of the Oklahoma City Thunder something wild, like 24 and a half? Or that's the average age of the starters or something? It's like 12. And Alex Caruso is the outlier, right? He's 31 years old. Why in the world would a team like the Oklahoma City Thunder value an outlier like that when the data is so prevalent? It's because they think he has that much value.
100%. He does have value. I'm not disgracing Alex Caruso. He's a great player. He fits a role on them. But the Bulls got one of their best players. The Oklahoma City Thunder got their sixth or seventh best player.
Who right now do you think are some of the Bulls' best players, Robbie? Let's put this into perspective.
Let's go with Kobe White. Let's go with Mata Buzelis. And there's not a whole lot else after that.
Wow, just left out the all-star, Vooch. Just left him out.
Yeah, sure. He's three or four.
Mm. Wow.
This is a topic we will continue to track.
Yeah.
Mostly because Robbie's obsessed with it.
Well, I just think they won the trade. That's all I'm saying.
It just has more to do with the fact that it was a matter of what assets best fit the Bulls' needs.
You think the Bulls won the trade?
I do think they won the trade.
So when Oklahoma City is hoisting up the trophy, you're going to be like, the Bulls still won the trade?
They got a young, proven asset right now in Josh
Giddey. What has he proven?
What do you mean? He's a triple-double machine.
Oh, dear.
You know what this sounds like? This sounds like when Magic Johnson was tweeting about Michael Carter Williams, his rookie year with the Philadelphia 76ers.
And said he's a triple-double.
Yeah, MC Dub. He's a triple-double machine. Oh, wait. He spent time in Chicago, didn't he?
Sack machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Number five.
That's me. Is getting to back-to-back Western Conference Finals success for the Timberwolves? Would we consider making back-to-back Eastern Conference Finals success if the Bulls were in the same position?
Okay, so I asked this question because I think that there is an element of success here already. And when you consider how ridiculously difficult the Western Conference is it a failure that the T-Wolves haven't made it to the finals? No, because of, for example, Anthony Edwards' age. B, I think we would kill to have back-to-back Eastern Conference Finals appearances, would we not? I can name several people. I will keep those to myself, but I can name them. Maybe that's two wins. But the point is, I would be thrilled if the Bulls made it to back-to-back Conference Finals, even if they wanted to get to the finals, and that was the instead result. I would be happy with that for sure. So basically, this is me saying, I don't mind that the T-Wolves took all these big swings, even though that was the result.
Let me make sure I have the question correct. Is getting to back-to-back Western Conference Finals success for the Timberwolves? It absolutely is success. Have you seen the Western Conference? Also, to Layla's point, Anthony Edwards turns 24 years old in August.
I'm uncomfortable with how young all these capable stars are.
Well, that's my point. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, also young, but not as young as Anthony Edwards. And no one was saying he was having no success. Well, he wasn't making it to back-to-back Western Conference Finals at Anthony Edwards' age. Let's start with that.
When he was his age.
So Anthony Edwards now, who's already vowed that no one will work harder than him this offseason. He's already got the blueprint because of what happened last summer when he got to spend it with LeBron, KD, Steph, the gang, and understands how hard he has to work. I love this setback in a way for Anthony Edwards. I think it forges the path forward and what it has to look like for the Timberwolves as a whole, but Anthony Edwards in particular going forward. And I think this is just the start. You haven't heard the last of Anthony Edwards.
Well, like even extrapolated to the Knicks. Say the Knicks go back-to-back in Eastern Conference Finals appearances. Is that a failure even though you make it that far?
This year is a failure for them. So, yeah. This year is a failure because of who they lost to and how they lost.
Well, and the fact that the injuries to the Celtics perhaps gave them their
If you
only
get a window like
window.
This, you better run, get through the window. Yeah, the sun went down. I'm sorry, Layla.
I'm really keeping an eye on the sun thing.
It's back behind clouds.
It's almost like we revolve around it or something. I don't know.
At least the cloud isn't attacking us anymore.
I see what you did there.
See, Twitch is in on this. Like, Twitch is very invested in this discussion, and I appreciate that. Airborne says it the best. You can't make it to the finals if you don't make it to the conference finals.
Yes, this is a successful back-to-back run for Anthony Edwards, no doubt.
But it's a good question, because even when your standard is high, to make it to the next best thing that consistently, I don't think is a bad thing either. We're just sitting here and pondering in silence.
People didn't want us to talk about Caleb Williams anymore. Boom, Giddy talk. There you go.
That's not
the
answer.
These are your two options.
That's not the answer.
Don't talk Caleb. Talk more Giddy.
You know what? We should talk about the team that's won 12 of its last 15 games. The team that's won 5 straight series and has 2 more to go before their end of the run where they face 21 straight games against sub-500 competition. Bravo, Chicago Cubs. You're going to go, I think, 15-6, maybe even better based on what's happened so far.
Yeah, Marshall has created an imaginary stretch of game record that he wanted the Cubs to meet or beat. So I think we need to check in on that benchmark, which we totally made up ourselves, but the point is that they reached it. So we'll talk about that next on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
He drives one in the air to right. If it stays fair, it's got a chance to leave the yard. That ball is gone. Pete Crow Armstrong with a home run to right. Cubs lead 2-0. The 2-2. Swing and a miss. Strike 3. High fastball got him. Cubs win the game and they sweep the 3-game series.
You know who that is. That's our friend, the birthday boy himself, Pat Hughes, calling part of what ended up being a 3-game sweep of the Cubs over the Rockies. And we're happy with that. It's okay. They don't always have to be world beater games. It can be a 2-1 ball game and you can appreciate the art in it. And I feel like that's what happened over this past 3-game set. The weather dictated we weren't going to see a lot of runs being scored. But I think there is an expectation where when the general manager talks about blowouts being the true measure of success of a team, you expected to see one in that 3-game set against a Rockies team that is now 9-47. It's not even June and they already have 47 losses.
Or it's not even June and they're still looking for their 10th win. Single digits is crazy.
Yeah, the math is mathing hard here.
You know what I was thinking about yesterday? I was watching that Wolves game. And I was like, oh, what's worse, 9 wins at this point or 9 points in the first quarter of an elimination game for your team, like a playoff send-home elimination game? They're both pretty bad.
I think the first quarter one might be worse because you got the opportunities to get you there, and then you just lay the biggest of eggs.
The biggest thing about this series is what I learned from it. What we're starting to learn about this team is they can indeed win without putting up double-digit runs in a series. I love that. They outscored the Rockies over 3 games, 9-5, including 2 one-run wins, a game that went to extra innings, which we had the opportunity to go to, and now they've won 4 in a row, 7 of 8, 10 of their last 12, and are now 12-3 in the stretch of 21 straight games against sub-500 opponents. And The whole point is you have to beat the teams you're supposed to beat if you're a good team. And when I say supposed to beat, I don't mean other teams you're contending against for the division. I just mean the bottom of the barrel teams, teams who are in last place.
I mean, I will say this. Typically when we see a division or a team who far and away has more wins than anybody else in the respective league, whether it's AL or NL, it's usually because they're in a division that has a team that's as bad as the Rockies. Part of the reason for the Dodgers' inverse record is because they've had so much success previously, especially when it was the unbalanced schedule. You know, that was a big reason why. That's why you saw the likelihood of 100 win seasons for a lot of these teams, is because there was one team like that that you could beat up on a regular basis. This is different, but the 2-1 game is sexy for me for a lot of different reasons, just because it comes down to the finer points of baseball. One of the things that baseball did, not just in having the now balanced schedule, was also that they wanted to encourage stealing when they increased the size of the bases. We talked about it a little bit when it first started to happen. I feel like that was a focal point the first season after. But now you're really seeing the fruits of the labor. Like, here we are talking about the importance of sending PCA in the 11th inning and making that gutsy steal of third base, for example. You're understanding how that played into a just simple base hit for Matt Shaw, resulting in a Cubs win. You know, those are the finer points. Same with this 2-1 ball game. Again, we talk about PCA, but this time it's because that home run that he hit was bizarre. Like, the question on MLB.com was, how did he hit this? And I get it, because that thing was low, and the launch angle he had was 36 degrees. Like, that is wild.
PCA continues to amaze, looking at a possible 40-40 season, if he can keep it up. And I'm not saying I do or don't expect him to keep up this current pace that he's on, but he's probably going to have a very good season this year based on what's already transpired. Whether he becomes a 10 war player or he's just a 6-7 war player, it's going to be a very good season for Pete Crow Armstrong.
These are your options.
And so these are great options. And people want to find, you know, the holes to poke in whatever is going on, even when it's positive. That's just kind of where we are.
We do it too. But yeah, it's just a matter of case-by-case basis.
But I want people to understand, just because they didn't score more than 4 runs in this series in any individual game, they scored 3 runs, then 4 runs, then just 2 runs. But the fact that they were able to win those games, that's important. And it's something we talked to Ian Happ about. And listen, this is not unexpected, because weather is a factor. And yes, it's almost June, but it has not been warm. It has been cold and the wind has been blowing in. But I asked him specifically about Wrigley Field in these conditions, and he talked about how this is kind of how they have to be able to win games when they're not putting up 7-8 runs.
When you're playing in an environment like Wrigley, you know, the last couple of days, the wind's been blowing in. It's tough to score runs.
Yeah.
It's a really tough run-scoring environment. We hit a bunch of balls hard yesterday that, you know, on a normal day or in a different ballpark are probably putting up a bunch of runs. I think Dansby hit the first 2 balls that he hit were absolutely scorched. And so when you're on the wrong side of it, from the wind standpoint, like, they had 2 balls that got out the last 2 days, and we hit a bunch of balls hard that didn't go. So
Carson Kelly almost hit one.
Yeah, yeah. Carson hit a ball, hit a rocket that just got caught up. And so it's tough to be able to put up runs in that environment. So you're going to be playing close games. There'll probably be another one tonight. I think the wind's going to be blowing in again. So you're sticking with it, and our offense has done such a good job of that. And I can't say enough about what the bullpen did, locking it down yesterday, and Flex coming in and putting up those 2 big innings to give us a chance.
So you hear that from Ian Happ before the 2-1 game that transpired before our very eyes last night. And it gives you an understanding that these players know what they're up against and they're comfortable with it. And you might be like, well, how can they be comfortable with only scoring 2 runs, 3 runs, 4 runs? We've been seeing an explosive offense. I think the reason people aren't as happy with what just happened, even though it was a 3-game sweep, and that's the best you can do when you play 3 games, is win all 3 games.
What about the Rockin' Jock, where there's like a 4-point shot and stuff?
No 4-point shot here. There's no 5-run home run to be had.
Oh man.
But here's how I know Ian isn't just comfortable with playing in those conditions, and he talked about having somewhat of an advantage because they're used to it. It happens all the time when you play at Wrigley Field, especially at night, right? Because I asked also, okay, so you are scoring 6 runs per game. Is that actually sustainable? Something that only one Cubs team in history has ever done before, of doing an entire season. Here's what he had to say in response to that.
I think as long as guys stay healthy, I think this is the version. I think this is the version of the Cubs that we kind of all expect or believe that we can be. And it's not going to be linear. It's not going to be exactly like this all year, right? There's not going to be, you're not going to get the exact performance from every guy. There's going to be ups and downs for everybody. But I think our lineup's built in a way where when one guy is going through his 2 week tough stretch, the other guys are going to pick him up. And I think you'll continue to see that kind of throughout the course of the year. And as, I think as long as like we stay healthy, I think we have the ability to do that. And to the point of the weather, like we've been the best offensive team on the road in baseball this year. And I think that that's kind of a testament to our ability to hit balls out of the ballpark, our ability to score in different ways. And it's something that I think I've talked about a lot today, but I really do believe that that's what makes this sustainable, is it's not just guys hitting homers with two guys on base. It's a lot of different ways and kind of up and down the lineup. It's not two guys that are carrying the whole group. You know, Pete and Saya and the amount of runs they've been able to drive in has been awesome, but you're getting it from Tucker, from Carson, from Miggy, from Dansby, like all the way up and down the lineup. You know, you're getting production, and that's huge.
Just keep naming names, because all the names from top to bottom have been doing big things. And I love that he mentioned the offense on the road and how great it's been. Most of their big, huge games either come when the wind's blowing out at Wrigley, or just all they have to do is play away from Wrigley. And the biggest thing, Layla, got a great test of that coming up. 10-game road trip. Nine-game road trip. No place better to test it out than a 9-game road trip.
Yeah, and three of those games are against the Detroit Tigers. And
yeah,
if you really want to see if you can bop, that ballpark will let you know. I also appreciate the lineup that we saw yesterday. 2-1 ball game, right? So for me, that's like special happy time. We saw Ian Happ leading off. Then it was Tucker. Then it was Seiya Suzuki. Seiya Suzuki, you're one of the RBI producers in that game. You got two. So he's batting third. He's your DH. Your cleanup hitter, Pete Crow Armstrong, I mentioned the home run. He was your other RBI producer. He was batting cleanup in that game. Then you had Carson Kelly. Then you had Michael Bush, Dansby Swanson, Nico Horner, Matt Shaw. That's how that lineup should look. And in case you're wondering if this Cubs offense is doing more than you even may think, given the RBI production, far and away the RBI leader in Major League Baseball, 322 of them so far. Number two is the Dodgers at 301. Yankees are third at 293. That's statistically significant when you consider the difference between the Cubs and the Dodgers' RBI production.
The Dodgers are raking. Freddie Freeman is putting an exclamation point on his Hall of Fame career right now.
He's having a fabulous season.
And all that to say, as long as they can figure out the starting pitching element of this, because now it's gone from, okay, you know, the concern was third base, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the concern was the bullpen. I have more concern about the starting rotation than either of those two departments when it comes to the Cubs right now, because I believe that Craig Counsell has it going with the bullpen. Different guys coming up, different guys doing roles. Guys hurt, doesn't matter. And then Matt Shaw at third base has solved a lot of the questions about the lineup in general. And where did I tell you PCA should hit? Where did I say Pete Crow Armstrong should be hitting?
You had him hitting right where he was hitting yesterday.
Clean up.
Number four.
That would be number four. That's exactly where he should be hitting. And so now I'm just looking at the starting rotation with, do you have enough bullets from the five guys in the rotation right now to get not only through the regular season, but to mount a postseason run? They're going to have to make a trade for, if not one, maybe two starting pitchers.
And also just giving some more fun with numbers here. If you need more to prove that this is not just about one or two people on the Cubs lineup, but the entire lineup hitting in a hole. When I tell you that they've got 322 RBIs as a team, consider that in the National League alone, your top three in OPS all belong to the Dodgers. It's Freddie Freeman, Shohei Ohtani, and Will Smith in that order. What does that say when it comes to how good your lineup is as a whole right now? Like, this is a team effort we're seeing.
I think the situational aspect of it, the Cubs have just come up so big in so many situations, and that's how they've been able to build a record 14 games above 500. The fact that they are playing right now at such a successful clip is telling you, hey, just beat the teams you're supposed to and then compete with the other good teams. You don't have to beat them all the time. Because remember, before this stretch of games, they had lost back-to-back series against the New York Mets and the San Francisco Giants, but it hasn't mattered in the grand scheme of things.
Well, we were worried about how they performed against the Marlins, so I feel like all of this is valid to discuss. Like that, yes. I mean, I could see where it would be considered a red flag if you only beat the Rockies by a score of 2-1. Sure. But at the same time, when you consider how it was done, especially when pitching also got to shine, I'm okay with it. Like, I'm happy about all those things. 630 brings up a good point over text. What scares me about PCA is that he swings at a pitch just inches off of the ground and golfs it out of the park, but misses waist-high fastballs over the middle of the plate. Yes, and you know what that turns into? Swinging and looking silly against a slider. So, yeah, I'm with you when it comes to pitch selection. I'm sure that's something that they go over, too. But for whatever reason, he's got an eye for that low ball like that. And for right now, it's working. That's the hard part, is you don't want him to change too much, like Ian Happ said yesterday. But there is a flip side of that that can make you look really bad at times.
I like the aggression on PCA. And I'm not saying that his pitch selection is always great, but I'd rather him keep the attitude that has gotten him this level of success in this lineup, because there's other guys who do the things that you prototypically would like a batter to do. And that's why when people are like, PCA should hit leadoff, I was like, nah, put him in the 3-hole or the 4-hole, because that way his bat matters more. And he's not pressured to take more pitches as a leadoff guy. Ian Happ is perfectly suited for that role.
Can we add a number 6 to the 5 on it right now?
Oh, what'd you got?
This is for the group, number 6.
Number 6.
I don't have
that ready.
Is Justin Steele's arm the same arm that Ray used to have? The bionic arm that goes...
It absolutely is. I'm having like flashbacks from 2 summers ago when I dislocated my elbow and I wore the arm brace that looks like a robot arm, and I had every single person that I know come up to me and say like, hey, he looks like you have a robot arm.
Poor Justin Steele. You know that people are probably doing the same thing to him too, right?
I'm sure.
But do you think he did the same thing you did, where every time you move it or he moves it, he goes...
So when I saw...
Or it's like Grandma's Boy, where the guy thinks he's in the Matrix and then makes all the noises.
I had 4 distinct successive, like back-to-back thoughts when I saw Justin Steele walking around the outfield. Here were the thoughts. First was Bionic 6, which was an 80s cartoon... Bionic 6, ooh, ooh. Second, Inspector Gadget. Because that arm, you know, what them arms do.
Go-Go Gadget arm?
Yeah, Go-Go Gadget arm.
Do-do-do-do, Inspector Gadget.
Guys, all of our lives are turning into Inspector Gadget. Do you know how cool I thought it was that Penny could FaceTime Brain on her watch?
Well,
and now that's a thing.
That's a thing. Her and Michael Knight, they knew what was going on well before we did. The third one was the video game, 8-bit, of course, Bionic Commando, because he's swinging around with his bionic arm. And the fourth thing, I forgot what the fourth thing was because I had four.
Well, I'll tell you this, man, the phrase "what them arms do" is now going to be in my head forever.
What them arms do.
My bad.
No, that's fantastic. What are you talking about? That's a great line. It's like when I once said what I said and then I was like, whoa, can't say that on broadcast.
See, I want him to be like Henry Rowan Gardner. You know the movie Rookie of the
Year? Never heard of it. Tell me about
Cubs
it.
Pitcher. Obviously, everyone here knows about
Henry Rowan Gardner never hangs out at Cubs games either.
And never sings the 7th inning stretch every year.
Can you imagine if Justin Steele could just throw like 200 miles per hour like this 10-year-old kid? That'd be sick.
If only Justin Steele.
He'd be Daniel Palencia.
And his bionic arm could throw 200 miles an hour. Then we would really have something, guys. Then we would have a contending team.
Oh, $6 Million Man. That was the other one.
Wow, that is a lot of
old school, yeah.
Altogether.
It went straight to
I just thought about Ray's bionic arm.
Yeah.
I just asked if people knew Rookie of the Year one were in Chicago. So, my bad, Chicago.
You know what? It really was it was you knowing something that you're too young to know, and unfortunately, all of us, the target demo, knowing exactly what you were talking about.
Okay, that's good.
Next assignment for you is watching The Godfather.
Oh, I've seen The Godfather.
I know people who haven't. It's really scary.
No, great movie.
Yeah, it's
I've never seen Dumb and Dumber, though. I need to see Dumb and Dumber. That's the one movie I haven't seen.
Oh, wow.
Or any Star Wars.
All right, yeah, that's got to happen. We have a Bob Alert next, and it comes from a very unlikely source. And you're going to get all of it after the commercial break.
What about that?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I had to get on the line. I had to pick up the phone about Bajan. He's the real deal. This is coming from a pure bloodline. I think you're going to get a stud in this kid, and I think he's the real deal.
Are you talking about a racehorse, sir? Otherwise, that was a very odd description of a human. Okay, so that said,
he's looking at the lineage of a 30-plus time arm wrestling champion.
Yeah, so Robbie is the one who coined the term when we were in our pre-show meeting today. You know what Mark Groening lovingly refers to as backstage. This is Raheemi and Harris on 670 The Score. We know there was a lot to digest from Halas Hall yesterday. Not one but two quarterbacks spoke. It wasn't just Caleb Williams. Ben Johnson also talked. If you missed that, you can go back, listen. That was at the top of their show at 10 o'clock on the Rewind feature. But Case Keenum also talked. And I did make the joke yesterday about how I never thought I would talk about Case Keenum and Karan Amagaje so much. However, there is reason to have Case Keenum discuss not only his opinion of the Bears, the quarterback room, and the like, but also the fact that Ben Johnson even kept him from retiring. How about that? That was something that was on his mind, and he wanted to be a part of this.
Case Keenum is a guy that a lot of people wished had been in the quarterback room last year. A guy, either not him specifically, but a guy like him, a veteran quarterback, because Tyson Bagent, along with Caleb Williams, probably didn't have the direction from within the room that they needed from a vet. That's part of the formula. Now, could that have solved all the myriad of problems that ended up facing the Chicago Bears last season? Probably not. I'm going to go out on a limb and say probably not.
Oh, I think it might have been able to help. Given all the vets they added and given the perspectives that we heard, I think it would have helped stop that losing streak from getting 10. I do think that having somebody in the room with you who's a player who's got that kind of veteran vantage point in the quiet moments when you're not in front of your coaches to be like, hey, we can fix this. It's not that bad. I think it's worth at least one or two games to stop that from happening.
Maybe. I guess I'm all out on Shane Waldron and how things went. And I don't know that they could get around that roadblock. It's like the pothole that takes up the entire street, even the other side of the road where the oncoming traffic is coming.
Yeah, it's always easy to blame a guy who's not here because he deserved to not be here, right? Like that's the double-edged sword there. But then B, it's trying to figure out, well, what was going to stop it? You know, we talk a lot about like the bounce you get from a new head coach, but they didn't get that either when it happened. Like that didn't happen with Thomas Brown right away. So all of it stands to be discussed. The point is, the veteran leadership in these key places is something that the Bears clearly wanted. They wanted someone else. They wanted a perspective, somebody different who wasn't just two young players like having Tyson Bagent and Case Keenum. And we've talked about how much that difference is going to make. Case Keenum is not a coach. He's also probably not the one on the field, you know, in game one. That's going to be Caleb Williams, of course, barring anything crazy. But I do appreciate his perspective when it comes to not only talking about being on the Bears and wanting to play and not retire yet at 37. But then also, as Robbie pointed out, we had a bit of a bob alert when he started talking about Tyson Bagent competing for QB2.
I've competed my whole life, you know. I show up every day and hope my locker's not cleaned out, man. That's how I treat every day. I compete against myself, compete against the guys in that room. I compete against, you know, the defense we're playing that day, today, and then every day. I've competed my whole life. So, you know, I have a knack of you know, sticking around and being ready to go when my name is called, no matter when that is or how that is. So I'm impressed with that whole room. Caleb, obviously, I've already talked about him, but I think Tyson's going to play a long time in this league. I really do. He is very athletic. He's trained and he is hungry. I mean, he's one of the most well-prepared guys on that field every day. So I'm very impressed with him. And Austin, I see a lot of myself in Austin, a young guy that just needs a shot and is hungry, doesn't get a ton of reps, but man, makes the most of them when he can.
A true journeyman, if you will, because he's played for a lot of teams.
I like how he said hungry. That was a Texas accent hungry if I've ever heard one.
The Bears are his eighth team, Layla. And this is a guy who hasn't just played and held a clipboard all the time. He did play in two playoff games, won one of them. And so I look at this right now as there's an adult in the room, not to infantilize either Caleb Williams or Tyson Bagent, but just a guy who has been through more than either of those guys have been through. So sharing that knowledge. And what I loved about it is what we heard about yesterday with the whole Tudor situation. They're limited, the coaching staff, as to how much contact, how much instruction they can give Caleb Williams, and I guess throw Tyson Bagent in the mix as well. And so when you have someone who can help you, that older student who already took trig, can help you get through and prepare for the test, now you're working smarter, not harder, which is what Caleb Williams was trying to talk about, like make it more efficient for me.
And Case Keenum knows how to throw a football. You know, when I think of him, I don't necessarily think of his long NFL career that you just talk about. I think about how he was the NCAA career passing yards leader at one point. He had 19,217 yards to his name. He has the NCAA record in career passing touchdowns, career pass completions. A lot of times you think that is a system quarterback, but here's the thing. You combine it with his lifetime in the NFL, and that makes for a serious resume. I don't care who you are. You're going to learn a thing or two from somebody like that. I guarantee you the film comment might not have been made, you know, given somebody like that in your quarterback room. You know, Case Keenum knows how to watch film and then some. You pick up best practices from all these teams you've been with, and that's a big part of it to me. That is value.
You know what? One of my favorite stats is about Case Keenum. He played all 16 games back in 2018 for the Denver Broncos, and he was only sacked 34 times. And we talk about just...
That's a big difference.
Yeah. All those snaps, 34 snaps, that's something you can live with, a quarterback getting sacked, you know, around 30 times a year.
Guys, I'm still laughing at Chris Emma from yesterday. Just being
a lot of coaching going on,
overwhelmed on the practice field and going, there's so much coaching going on, I had to go inside.
Listen, that's something we can get into, talk about how much coaching was going on with our next guest.
Yes, if there is one person who could definitely tell us about how much coaching there was going on at Ellis Hall yesterday, it is Herb Howard. Herb Howard of the Bigs Media is coming up next. He's in studio for two segments. You won't want to miss it. You've got the score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.